Both the city and school budget, and WMUR-TV reports 160 school layoffs hang in the balance. Mayor Ted Gatsis wanted to renegotiate teachers' current contract and make concessions, but that was rejected. Many parents spoke at the meeting about their disappointment in city leaders, urging aldermen to reach a budget that will benefit the city's students. City leaders have until the end of the month to reach a budget compromise, or the mayor's proposed budget would become law. Another special meeting is scheduled for next Tuesday to discuss the budget again. This is NHPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org.
And support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from you, our members, and from Chippers, caring for your trees, turf, garden, land, and forest, serving the Upper Valley, Kearsarge and Lakes regions, and Concord area. ChippersINC.com. And Home Health Care, Hospice, and Community Services, offering geriatric care management for seniors in southwestern New Hampshire. Information at hcsservices.org. The forecast for today, fed some morning fog that's burned off. We'll see occasional sunshine throughout the midday. Some more clouds this afternoon with a chance for showers at times statewide. It will be warmer today, highs near 65 in the North Country, closer to 70 degrees from the Lakes region to the seacoast today. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, some patchy fog will form. Overnight lows in the upper 40s to near 50. And Thursday, a mix of clouds and sun with a chance for a shower or a thunderstorm. The North Country seeing the most sunshine tomorrow afternoon. Highs reaching into the mid-70s. Right now in Laconia, it's 55. It's also 55 in Keene, 57 in Manchester, 53 in Portsmouth, and 58 in Gorham. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Fifteen years ago, the New Hampshire Supreme Court handed down a decision that has plagued lawmakers and governors ever since, the Claremont ruling. The court broke new ground, declaring the state government had a responsibility to provide what it called an adequate education for all students. The decision marked a huge shift. Before Claremont, school dollars came almost exclusively from local property taxpayers. Now the state provides almost $1 billion annually. But almost as soon as the ruling was released, there was talk of overturning it with a constitutional amendment. And since then, roughly 80 attempts have been made to amend our Constitution, giving lawmakers, not courts, more authority over which districts get state aid and which don't. All of these have failed. Now, though, the state's top elected leaders say this could be the year. A conference committee hammered out compromise language last week, and the full House and Senate vote on the amendment today. But the threshold for constitutional change is high, a 3/5 majority in the legislature and 2/3 of voters. Also, this new amendment, while it does have lots of high-level supporters, has also raised the ire of some on the political right who feel it demands too much state involvement in schools, and on the left, where many feel it doesn't demand enough. Today in The Exchange, will this latest amendment pass or fail the political process? Let's hear from you. How do you feel about this amendment? Do you think elected leaders should have more authority over education funding? Or do you support the premise of Claremont that the state has a responsibility to help educate every child? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us a short email, theexchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you go to our page, join the conversation there. We have two guests for the hour. Joining me in studio is Jim Allmendinger, staff attorney for the New Hampshire chapter of the National Education Association. And Jim, it's nice to see you. Welcome back.
Morning, Laura.
Also with us by phone, Jean Van Loan, partner with Wadley, Starr & Peters, and an expert in constitutional law. Jean has been a consultant to both Republicans and Democrats on how best to draft a constitutional amendment on education. And Jean, a welcome back to you, too, and thanks for your time.
You're very welcome.
Well, and Jean, we've had lots of conversations about this over the years, so I want to start with you. Before we get into the amendment wording and the legality of Claremont and so forth, in your opinion, Jean, what's the fundamental question at stake here? What are we really talking about?
Well, I think we're talking, you know, to boil it down to two primary issues. The first one is whether or not it makes any sense to sustain the Supreme Court's determination that the state has an obligation to pay 100% of an adequate education, whatever that is, to every school district throughout the state. rather than to provide money where money is needed. That's the first issue. And let's call that funding adequacy at 100% level versus targeting aid. And the second question is simply, who should be deciding these things? Typically, legislators legislate. This is a policy decision. What is an appropriate education? What should be the rules for education? How much money should be spent is a typical policy decision. The Claremont decision says that the Supreme Court has the power to second-guess the legislature in these matters and basically to override the legislature's policy decisions in education, where it doesn't have that kind of authority in virtually any other circumstance. So I would say those are the two basic issues.
Jim Allmendinger, how would you answer that? What are we talking about here?
Well, I think fundamentally it's an issue of money, and the proponents of the amendment, for one reason or another, want to take meaningful state funding out of the equation of public education. Prior to the Claremont decision, New Hampshire was last in the country in providing state aid to local public schools. We paid crushing property taxes, and we're already headed there. The speaker has proposed $400 million in cuts for next year. With the cuts to higher education in New Hampshire, we're now last in funding higher education in the country. So it's really an effort on the part of the proponents to take any kind of meaningful state funding for public education out of the equation.
What about the idea that Gene raises, Jim, that, you know, these issues that you just raised are policy decisions to be made by elected leaders, governors and lawmakers and school board members and so forth, that this isn't the correct province of court justices?
Well, the court has never said the legislature has to spend a particular dollar amount. The court made it clear that it's up to the legislature to define what is an adequate education, to determine what the costs are, and to fund that. The other thing is frankly, we're talking about a very fundamental right, and I know that the use of the phrase fundamental rights gets into the legalities of the thing, but the underlying concern should be that no child deserves less than another child in public schools in New Hampshire. There is a promise of public education in the Constitution. Without Claremont, there are no safeguards. The majority of the legislature gets to decide which towns do well in funding and which towns do poorly. I would add to that, we do have targeting now. On a per-pupil basis, some districts get zero additional funds beyond adequacy. Other districts get as much as $8,000 per student beyond adequacy.
Adequacy is like $3,400, right?
$3,500. With adjustments for English language learners, low income, and other criteria. So there is targeting. It's really, frankly, a myth, a false target to say that there's no targeting under the current scheme. So for all of those reasons, we really do need to keep the state in the equation. And if it takes the Constitution to do that, then the Constitution should do that, and the court plays an important role.
Well, and here's a question for you, Gene. I remember a few years back, I think it was 2006, the state Supreme Court got frustrated with what the legislature was not doing on this issue. And it said, look, the existing school funding formula is unconstitutional. Fix it or we'll fix it for you. So the state embarked on this three- or four-step process, define an adequate education, figure out the cost, figure out a way to raise the money equitably. And in 08, the court said, okay, state, you met the mandate, you did a good job. At that point, I remember people, Gene, saying, look, okay, great, we're done with this. How come we're still back talking about this now, Gene? I thought that the state did its job and everybody was happy.
Well, I'm sure that everybody is not happy, and I bet Jim is one of the ones that is not happy. The fact of the matter is, as he said, the court has never actually said that the state must spend a certain amount of money. But the court has not had the opportunity to do that yet. And it will come someday if we don't do something about this. I think it's very clear that those who are great supporters of the Claremont Amendment, the Claremont decision, do not accept the proposition that $3,400 is the cost of an adequate education, in their view. Of course, it's subjective. What is the cost of an adequate education? There is no objective standard, but I'm sure that they disagree. And that will be challenged. It hasn't been challenged recently. We've had sort of a period of quiet, if you will, in the litigation. But the court has always said that when and if the a challenge is made, that it does have the authority, that and it has said that it would intend to exercise that authority to order the legislature to raise a certain amount of money. So that's there. You can't make that go away unless we make it go away with an amendment. And it's a completely unique situation in our Constitution that the court would ever have the authority to tell the legislature that it needs to raise a certain amount of money for anything.
No, so you're saying, Gene, this amendment would sort of close the revolving door of lawsuits that we've seen over education funding?
I believe it would. Let's put it this way. Nobody has ever suggested that this amendment would absolutely prevent lawsuits. The court still has a role under this amendment. For example, the amendment, without getting into the details of the language at this point, does say that the legislature has the power and authority to pass reasonable standards of education. Well, that's a term of art saying that the court can review what the legislature does do in passing standards and can determine whether or not they are reasonable, which is what it does with all other laws. So there's still a role for the court, and there still could be some litigation. But the fact of the matter is, without the court having this unique power that it assumed for itself under the Claremont decision to second-guess the legislature on funding decisions, and particularly to do it under a very heavy burden, which we call strict scrutiny, which is a legal term of art, meaning basically you presume that the legislature is doing something wrong, and the legislature has to prove to the court that whatever it is doing is enough. That won't happen anymore. We won't have, and that is a huge invitation to litigation. So I'm sorry if I went on too long, but the bottom line is that it doesn't shut the barn door for litigation, but it
slows
sure
it down.
Means that it's going to trim it down to what it would be normal in any other situation.
Well, let me invite our listeners to join us, and then I have a question for you too, Jim. Our number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the Exchange, we're looking at a new constitutional amendment on education funding up for a vote today in the House and Senate. Join us with your questions and comments about what this amendment would mean for school budgets and for students. 1-800-892-6477. Do you agree that elected leaders should be the ones who have a say over this policy of education funding? Or do you support the premise of Claremont that the state does have a responsibility to help educate every child, no matter where he or she lives? Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Jim Allmendinger, what about what Gene says, the idea that, look, we've had so many of these lawsuits, enough already, and the amendment helps slow this down?
Well, of course, there has been a long history of litigation involving school funding. Depending upon who you talk to, it goes back to the 1960s and 70s. And it reflects the fact that schools do and should play an important role in our communities, and we need to support them. I would like to take issue with Gene's conclusion that Claremont is unique. I don't think it is unique. Courts order legislatures to pay money for a variety of things in a variety of contexts. We don't really need to get into the details other than to say that Claremont is not unique. With regard to litigation, we also have to remember that Claremont really stood on two legs. One leg was that there was a state duty to fund an adequate education, but the other leg was that property taxes were not reasonable and proportional as required by the state constitution, because taxpayers in one town were paying up to four times as much as taxpayers in another town for that public education. And we're looking at going back to that. The five plaintiff towns in Claremont, Pittsfield, Allenstown, Franklin, and Lisbon are all looking at tax increases of up to $3,000 on a $200,000 house if we go back to pre-Claremont days. In other towns, Manchester is $1,000, Berlin it's $4,600 in an increase. That, without regard to the state duty to fund education, just reasonable and proportional taxes is likely to generate more litigation.
All right. Well, lots more to talk about after a short break, and we'll start taking your calls too, so keep it right here.
My name's Christina Yoon. a little bit of an NHPR nerd. Yeah, mug collector too, yeah. And I live in the small hamlet of Center Barnstead. I became a member in 2006, I believe. I think I got guilted into it.
Aqua Java's popularity has been growing because of its refreshing, crisp tastes.
Seriously, I'm pretty sure it was one of those Ira Glass snippets.
Friends, is this what you want?
And I got guilted.
That we get rid of the pledge drive and scrounge instead for every dollar that we can get?
And I feel really bad. I mean, I listen to it all the time and I don't... I wasn't supporting my local radio station, but now I am, so... I can carry my mug around guilt-free.
You can become part of the Guilt Alleviation Society by giving us a call right now at 1-888-805-6477. Good morning. I'm Rick Gamley, host of Morning Edition here on NHPR, alongside Abby Goldstein, our Vice President of Programming. We're welcoming you to NHPR's very short two-day fund drive. We do mean it's very short, we promise. Our fiscal year ends in just a few weeks on June 30th, and we have just what, Abby, $47,000 left to raise to balance our budget?
Yes, we are very, very close to balancing our budget. $47,000 left to raise from individual contributions from listeners to balance our budget. And because membership donations make up 40% of our budget, much of the money we track throughout the year is from you. And as we approach the end of our fiscal year, we look to you, our listeners, to come through for us and help us close this gap. A typical gift is about $100. Every gift makes a difference. So let's hear from you right now. 1-888-805-6477. Or make your gift online, nhpr.org.
Listening to The Exchange this morning, talking about the school funding amendment, talking about the Claremont decision way back from 1997, you realize that this story has had a long, long history, a long life. And one of the things that New Hampshire Public Radio does best is follow these stories in depth over time. We've done that on The Exchange. We've done that in our newsroom. We've done that with specials over the years, following what's going on with this this talk, this amendment, of course. And this is your chance to weigh in on the subject as well with The Exchange. This is your time for people all over New Hampshire to weigh in on their opinions about what's going on. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call and support that conversation and support that programming that comes to you day in and day out. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
You know, Rick, in our archives, there is tape from the 2 weeks of live coverage that we did back in the 90s when this Claremont decision first occurred. So it is something we've been following for decades now, and you help make that possible. Listen, we know this is an excellent service. We know what we do brings you excellent coverage, and that's why we're not bashful about asking you to support it. You think this is an excellent service as well. All that remains is for you to recognize that your support is a critical part of what we do. We are relying on you to help us balance our budget right now. When everyone who listens donates, NHPR becomes stronger. So do your part today. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And some of that support comes from new members. In fact, we have a new member challenge here on the table when we hear from 200 new members by 7 p.m. tomorrow at the end of the drive. We'll receive an additional $5,000 from a group of donors, including Mary and John Rowe, Woolsey and B. Conover, Casey Trumbull, Bill Chapman, Alex Ray. They have gotten together with others, and they have put that $5,000 challenge up for you to become a new member now. So if you are listening, and I know there are an awful lot of you that aren't members yet, this is your time. Let's hear from you right now so we can all do our part. 1-888-805-6477. 1-888-805-6477.
Going back to The Exchange in just a moment. Don't forget, everyone who donates during this two-day drive is entered to win a brand new third-generation iPad. So get in on that, too.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Company C, creating a lifestyle of colorful living with brightly colored area rugs, bedding, furniture, and home accents. Retail store in Concord and online at companyc.com. And Vermont Law School, holding an information session about their Master of Environmental Law and Policy on June 20th. Information at vermontlaw.edu. Mostly cloudy, some occasional sunshine today. There could be some scattered showers, highs from 65 to 70 degrees. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the latest education funding amendment is up for a vote today in the New Hampshire House and Senate. Some say it has the best chance yet of any amendment for passing. Let's get your thoughts and questions on this. Call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook. We hope you go to our page. Join the conversation there. And Gene Van Loan and Jim Allmendinger, let's go to the phones right now. Michael's waiting in Concord. Hi, Michael. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Morning.
Let's be honest and say what this is about. This is about taxes. And the way to put it, and Mr. Allmendinger came very close to saying this, is that if the state has to pay a significant share of the cost of education, it must do so with a tax that's equal in rate and equal in value, uniform in rate and equal in valuation throughout the state. If the state doesn't have to pay, we can go on taxing the way we have. That's what it's about. And the amendment is to avoid a broad-based tax.
And how do you feel about the amendment itself, Michael?
I'm against it.
You're against it. You think that the Claremont ruling had the right principles underlying it?
Yes, it was a tax decision, and the Supreme Court has every right to determine whether a tax is proportional and reasonable. The second Claremont decision addressed only taxes.
You know, Michael, this is an important point, and Gene, one that Jim Allmendinger brought up before the break, the idea that the tax burden in property-poor towns was crushing them as they tried to fund their public schools, while wealthier towns, you know, it really wasn't as big a burden, and that Claremont addressed this, and a lot of people thought that was a real problem that needed to be addressed.
Well, the irony of it is that the Claremont case turns the whole tax equity situation on its head. What we have now is the crazy situation where people in Claremont have to raise taxes through their payment of the statewide property tax in order to send money to what? Moultonboro and Newington. So the net result is that instead of raising taxes at the state level and sending it to the towns that need to have it, like Claremont or Allenstown or Pittsfield, we send this money to places that don't need it, that can well afford to raise their own taxes and educate their own children. So the fact of the matter is we have the poor, if you will, subsidizing the rich because of the requirement of Claremont that all these taxes to pay a so-called adequate education have to be raised by everyone at the same rate. The other thing I'll say is that, and I want to challenge Jim a little bit on this. He was suggesting that if this amendment passes, that you know, tax rates are going to go up in Claremont or in Manchester. Well, first of all, nothing is going to change if this amendment passes unless and until the legislature changes the existing laws that we have now that have implemented Claremont. That may well happen. It may not happen. But I respectfully suggest that if any law is changed once the amendment is passed, because the amendment is just authorizes the legislature to do things. It doesn't make them do things.
Yeah, the amendment is not about policy. It's about giving the legislature more flexibility to adopt whatever policy it sees fit. Is that what you're saying, Gene?
That is correct. So what they will do with it is going to be with, it'll be whatever the next legislature will do with it and the legislatures thereafter. But the one thing that I feel very confident of is that the tax equity situation will be resolved much more favorably in terms of the people that need to have relief, rather than creating the perpetuating the situation we have now, where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
You know, Jim, could you address this critique? Because, boy, it comes up a lot that basically the system we have now is a waste of state resources. Wealthier communities like Bedford don't need state aid, for example, to have high-quality schools. They've got the resources locally. So the idea is, look, if you don't have to give money to Bedford, you can send that much more to Berlin and Claremont, and then you don't get those crushing tax burdens that those communities experience.
Experience doesn't show that. Prior to Claremont, there was a formula adopted by the legislature in the early 1980s, the
Augenblick formula.
The legislature never funded that. We don't think the legislature would be funding adequate money for students statewide without the requirements of Claremont and the state constitution. It does provide tax equity. It does put money in those communities that need it. And as I said before, it does allow targeting. Now, not as much targeting as the proponents of the amendment want, but targeting nonetheless. With regard to the legislature cutting money, they have already adopted bills which cut $140 million this year and $140 million next year from public education. But they have held the communities that would suffer under those cuts harmless, called the collar. And we believe that the collar is going to come off if the amendment passes. That's already a $280 million cut to public schools. And the speaker is proposing a $400 million
cut. Okay, so wait, here's the question, though, that people on Gene's side would say. So vote the speaker out of office. Elect people who are, you know, supporters of lots of funding for schools. And, you know, you make that decision at the ballot box, not at the courthouse.
I certainly did not vote for Speaker O'Brien. I certainly do not support the policies of Speaker O'Brien. I hope the voters vote Speaker O'Brien out. But he, in fact, becomes, in my view at least, the poster child for why we need constitutional protections. Speaker O'Brien is no friend of public education. And if you value public education, you should oppose Speaker Bryan's policies and oppose Speaker Bryan's amendment.
All right. Well, speaking of the legislature, we have now in studio NHPR State House reporter Josh Rogers, and he'll be down at the State House later today counting heads on this big vote on the constitutional amendment on education funding. And Josh, thanks for giving us a little bit of your time this morning.
No problem, Laura. Good morning.
So again, from what I've read, Josh, the Senate, no question, the amendment's going to pass, right? No problem.
That's the conventional wisdom. I would expect it to pass, get the 16 votes it needs to clear the Senate. That'll be the amendment's first test later this morning.
And there's a high threshold for amendments, as we said earlier, 3/5 of the State House and Senate. So what does that mean in terms of the numbers in the House?
It means 237.
That's the magic number.
That will be the number that the leadership needs to hit. The numbers keep on changing. There's been, you know, recent resignations. There are 295, I think, Republicans in at the moment, and, you know, the remainder Democrats. Democrats are pretty much going to oppose this as a block. There may be one or two, but I don't know who they are. So it's going to come down to Republicans. They're going to need to hit 237. Attendance is important. If you don't show up, that's tantamount to a no vote. So, it's get them to Concord was the message from Republican leaders yesterday.
And as I understand, there's a big photo being taken today, right? And that's an incentive to get people to the floor?
I mean, appealing to the lawmakers' vanity has been known to work in the past, so they want to be in the team photo. That may get people to Concord. We'll see. I mean, there are always, 15 to 20 people. I mean, sometimes it fluctuates, who don't show up. And so there may be fewer than that today. But, you know, as I said, if you don't show up, that's going to be a no vote on this issue.
So the Republican Liberty Caucus is telling its members, Josh, to vote against this. How come?
Well, they think that it, you know, to their mind, enshrines the Claremont decisions. They don't like the fact that it has the language of responsibility to maintain, a system of education. They feel, you know, the Claremont decision should be overturned absolutely. And they think that this will lead to more litigation. More mainstream Republicans, and there are plenty of conservatives who support this as well, say this is what we've always wanted. So there is, the thinking is that this will come down to, the conservatives in there. And I talked to some who were genuinely on the fence, said, I'm probably not going to be able to get to sleep tonight trying to figure out what I'm going to do. You know, how aggressively they take the fight to the floor against this is one thing that I'm surely going to be watching today. But again, without Democrats supporting it, and Governor Lynch is sort of out there on his own, seemingly. I mean, there may be, Senator D'Alessandro probably support this in the Senate, but in terms of House members, I have no idea who's going to support this. So
you've had to beat the bushes to find a Democrat who likes it?
Well, having to beat the bushes, and the governor didn't even reach out to Democrats. I was up talking to the leadership in the Democrats, and I said, well, I know what the governor's been saying in the newspaper. He certainly hasn't been calling. And so, his role may be pivotal should this clear the legislature. But again, he's not going to be running again, and his only technical role will be able to vote for this as a citizen should it make it onto the ballot.
Right. He doesn't officially have a voice on this, unlike
unlike a regular bill where he would be able to veto it or sign it. But a little bit more on Governor Lynch. Okay, so much has been made of the fact that he has signed on to this. Everybody's been saying, wow, we've got the House leadership and the Senate leadership and the governor. Why hasn't his support meant more? And why hasn't he gone to bat for this amendment beyond saying, yes, I like this?
Well, I mean, again, he's not running for re-election. The two Democratic candidates for governor are leery of this amendment. You know, certainly the political dynamics, you know, may play a part in that. You certainly need to have support of the base to win a primary. You know, the governor's political capital, you know, it's become a little devalued at this point, frankly. And so that's one reason. And, you know, he's starting to look beyond the state house, whether he says that or not.
Well, and one more quick question for you, Josh. Just this morning, headlines saying that the legislature's only married couple duo, Lori Sanborn, a state rep, and Andy Sanborn, a state senator, resigned due to the fact that they're moving and redistricting. What impact might that have on this big vote today?
Well, Lori Sanborn was certainly expected to support this in the House, so that's a lost vote for the Speaker and Republican leaders. Andy Sanborn's vote, you know, that's a vote lost in the Senate. It's expected to still hit the 16 there, but you know, it doesn't make it any easier. And as we all know in this conversation, there have been many amendments that have failed before. If this passes, you know, it's no doubt it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. At least 80 attempts have been made since the original Claremont ruling 15 years ago. Josh, thank you very much. We'll be listening to your reports tomorrow morning.
You're welcome, Laura.
That's NHPR's Josh Rogers. As I said, he'll be down at the State House later today covering this vote on an education funding amendment. You can join us with your questions or comments right now at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What do you make of this amendment? Do you hope it passes or not? What do you think its impact would be on your own local public schools and on your own local tax rates? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Gene Van Loan, Jim Almendinger, here's an email from Matt that I want to share with you. Matt says, it seems like people want legislative overview of education funding only when their own party is in power. Matt says, I'm a Democrat and not happy at all about the idea of Republicans having control over education funding decisions. But I'm trying to take the long view that this amendment may be the only way to fix our education funding. Gene, what do you think?
I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, you know, this is the whole point, I think, that this is a fundamental question about whether or not we really believe in democracy or whether we so distrust our leaders, whether they be Republicans or whether they be Democrats, that we would rather cede control to the court and ask the court to construct some arbitrary decision that we all have to live with, whether we like it or whether we don't like it, and we can't change it, because once the court writes it into cement, that's where it is. It's all hardened, and we can't break it apart, even if we had a jackhammer.
Well, and this is a question for you, Jim. You know, Democrats in the past, not just the governor, have come out in support of some type of amendment. Is there any type of amendment that you think would be acceptable?
I didn't come this morning prepared to answer that question, and I don't really want to try and answer it on the fly. Certainly, all of these amendments have gotten careful scrutiny from all parties to the conversation, as would any future amendment. But we are talking about a fundamental right to public education under the Constitution. The court emphasized that that right really belongs to the state. It's important to the state's future. We need a well-educated electorate. We need a well-educated workforce. We are facing an array of technological changes that we need to equip our students to handle. And so the fundamental right under the Constitution goes not only to the students, but also to the state and its concerns over its future. This is not putting stuff in cement. This is not ceding control to the court. This is the legislature paying for its responsibility to New Hampshire's future.
All right. We will take more of your calls and emails after a short break. Matt, thanks for that email. The phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us.
I am a shusher. my name is Christina Yoon, and I live in the small hamlet of Center Barnstead. If there's a segment that's on, like today they were, there was a news segment about the unemployment rate.
In May, the economy added just 69,000 new jobs.
And someone came into my cube and was talking about work. And I'm like, oh, shh, wait, can you just wait just a minute? Let them finish saying what they're going to say. I did the two, it was one? No, it was the two-finger shush, not just one. Shh.
Hmm. Is that you? Are you a shusher? Are you shushing people because you got to hear the end of the conversation on New Hampshire Public Radio? Join us today. I'm Abby Goldstein. Welcome to NHPR's very short two-day fun drive. I'm with Rick Ganley, and we're inviting you to make a gift at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. We'll be back to this really important conversation on the constitutional amendment on education funding on the exchange in just a couple of minutes. Right now, though, your chance to support the station.
And we are coming to the end of our fiscal year. That's why we're coming to you today. And throughout the year, NHPR raises the money necessary to pay for the programs and, of course, all the stories that you hear every day coming out of your radio. Now, our budget is made up of different sources of funding, like, you know, program underwriting and special events and things like that. And individual donations from you, our listeners, make up a huge part of that. Now, we've reached the end of our budget year, and you have a role to play to help us balance our books, keep us in the black, and keep those great stories and keep these great conversations coming. Make your gift today. Help us end the fiscal year in the black with your phone, with your gift right now by a phone call at 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org.
And we are counting down. We now just have $46,000 left to raise from individual donations to balance our budget for the fiscal year. We can absolutely do this in 2 days. So make that call right now, 1-888-805-6477. We got a call this morning from Shannon, a teacher in Derry, and she says she uses stories she hears on NHPR in her social studies class. She called to make her gift this morning. So her kids are learning through public radio. You learn new things every day when you listen to public radio. Think of your donation as tuition for the classroom of life with great teachers and no homework. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Let's hear from you right now. You know, a lot of people ask, well, what would be a good gift? What, how much should I give? Well, a typical gift for NHPR members is about $100. But members give gifts of all sizes. So if there's a number that has some kind of personal significance for you in your life, you know, maybe think about that. Perhaps a $75 gift to mark your birthday or anniversary. Perhaps 50 is the sum of the ages of your children. Maybe you drive Route 101 every day. Maybe you say $101 is the perfect level for me. Or you listen to 99.5 in Jackson. I'll round it up, make it $100. Whatever number makes sense for you, we'd love to hear from you right now. Become a member of NHPR, and every gift goes that much further to helping us reach this goal, close out our books for the year, and keep that great programming coming for next fiscal year. 1-888-805-6477. That's the number to call. Let's hear from you right now. 1-888-805-6477.
Or online at nhpr.org. And don't forget, everyone who donates during this short two-day drive is entered to win a brand new third-generation iPad. Yep, the brand new iPad with double video cameras so you can use it for video conferencing. The new iPad that we're giving away was donated by Small Dog Electronics in the Mall of New Hampshire. But don't delay, because the deadline to enter is tomorrow at 7 p.m. Make sure you get your gift in. Make a $100 donation. You could win the iPad. And in fact, for a $100 donation, Rick, we'll also send you the member card. So go online, nhpr.org, to see the benefits with your member card and make that gift right now.
Yeah, absolutely. There are benefits. So let's hear from you right now. It is a short drive, so get in on that drawing, 1-888-805-6477. We're looking for new members as well. When we hear from 200 new members by 7 p.m. tomorrow, we'll receive an additional $5,000 from a group of donors here at NHPR. They put that money up. They're asking you to become a member of NHPR and do your part. Let's hear from you now, 1-888-805-6477, or go online and give your gift at nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dartmouth-Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. And from Profile Power Sports in Conway, featuring Coyote tractors ready for any job that demands a compact tractor to perform leisurely tasks to tough field work. ProfilePowerSports.com. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show, analysis of Wisconsin's recall election results. That's at 10 o'clock on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the latest education funding amendment goes before the New Hampshire House and Senate today. Many say this has the best chance yet of an amendment passing. Let's hear how you feel about that. Do you hope it passes or not? Do you think elected leaders should have more authority over education funding? Or do you support the basic premise of the Claremont decision, that the state has a responsibility to help educate every child? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is on Facebook. We hope you go to our page, join the conversation there. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our callers now. Karen's waiting in Loudoun. Karen, thanks a lot for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Sure, Laura. I want to just start out by saying I support the basic Claremont decision. One of your guests raised the question of equity and tax fairness earlier. I've always been puzzled as to why a state income tax dedicated to education funding is not an option for so many in the state, particularly Republicans. Wouldn't an income tax be the most fair, equitable way to tax people and pay for education across the board, so all of our children anywhere in our state can have the same chance at a good education?
Okay, Karen, thanks for the call. And Jean Van Loan, this has come up before. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a whole different question, truthfully. We have lots of disputes on all sides of the table about the merits or demerits of an income tax. I mean, I would say, you know, when the question is asked, why couldn't we do it? Well, of course we could do it. And as a matter of fact, if the Claremont decision is perpetuated and we don't have an opportunity to overturn it, I would say that the probability is that we will have one. Because, as I said, I'm sure that Jim Allmendinger doesn't think that $3,400 per student is sufficient, and he probably thinks it's more like $8,000 per student. Or 10,000 or whatever it is. But whatever the number is, I guarantee you the only way that that amount of money could be raised in this state without an extraordinary property tax or sales tax would be through an income tax. So can we do it? We probably will do it under the Claremont decision. I think that, you know, but the arguments about income tax versus other kinds of taxes goes a lot farther. I mean, the basic New Hampshire Advantage argument against the income tax is that it's frankly too easy to change. An income tax, you can raise it a little here, a little there, a little there, and that's what has happened in every state in the union that has a broad-based income tax. It always continues to go up, and it never goes down. And before you know it, it's out of control. But I really believe that's a separate argument that we can't really resolve here. I will say one thing. Wouldn't it be ironic if this bill to deal with education funding doesn't pass?
The amendment, you mean, right?
The amendment,
yeah.
Excuse me. It doesn't pass the legislature, so the voters never get to vote for it. But the amendment that prohibits an income tax does pass, and the voters adopt it. Then wouldn't we be in a weird situation, again, another weirdness dictated by Claremont, that when the case comes up that the court decides that the cost of an adequate education is, you know, some multiple of where we are, that we can't even raise it by an income tax. We'd have to do it through an astronomical, broad-based property, statewide property tax or a sales tax of I can't imagine the proportion, the percentage rate that the sales tax would have to be.
Well, and Karen, thanks for raising the point, because it does come up. And Jim, the fear that Gene expresses and that others have expressed is that, look, if you don't, you know, start to manage these education costs in the legislature, we will get to the point where they are so high that we will have to have an income tax.
I moved to New Hampshire 30 years ago, and this conversation was going on about an income tax. It hasn't happened. They haven't extended 393 to Portsmouth. I was told that was going to happen when I moved here 30 years ago. Someday there may be an income tax. Today is not that day. The other two constitutional amendments are going forward. They have the potential to wreak mischief upon the system. We have a compromise here in New Hampshire. We provide some funding for public education, but we don't provide a lot of funding for public education as compared with other states. Most states pay for more than half of local schools. We're down in the 37% range, even with the statewide property tax. New Hampshire voters are going to be skeptical about taxes, I think, always. We have the lowest overall tax burden of any state in the country. I'm sure there are those out there who would like to keep it that way very much, and they're going to vote.
Here's an email I want to share with both of you. And by the way, Karen, thank you again for calling. This is from Carr in Grafton, who says, why should we make an exception from the principle of separation of powers for education? How is the Claremont decision an exception to the principle of separation of powers? It does not violate that principle as far as I can see. Carr says the way it's supposed to work, the legislature can amend or remove or update a law the court shoots down. In other words, the court is interpreting the legality of the legislature's work, and that's its role. An amendment to the Constitution should not change that role relative to any specific topic, be it education or public safety. Jean Van Loan, that's a question that some have raised. You know, why is it fair to block the court from decisions in certain policy areas but not in others?
It isn't. The fact of the matter is it's the Claremont decision that created the exception to the rule. So all that this amendment does in this area is to return us, if you will, to the status quo, whereby the court doesn't have some extraordinary authority over education and education funding that it doesn't have in any other area, whether it's health care or police protection or fire protection or anything else. It's the Claremont decision that created an exception. The Claremont decision is what gave the where the court took upon itself the authority to second guess with this high level of scrutiny anything that the legislature does in this particular area, and basically not to just strike down what the legislature might do, but actually has stated that it has the power to substitute its own judgment, which it doesn't have in any other circumstance. Even when you get to freedom of speech or freedom of religion, where the court has special powers, the court can only and only does strike down a law from that the legislature may have passed that impinges upon those freedoms. But it doesn't tell the legislature, you have to substitute some new law in place of the one that we just struck down. It simply says, this one is unconstitutional. Now you are free to do something else or do nothing at all. The Claremont situation of education, where it claims that there's this affirmative right to have certain amount of money spent by the legislature, is completely unique because it's the only situation where the court says, A, we'll strike down a law, and B, we'll tell you what the new one should be.
Gene, real quick, in the interest of time, how is this amendment that we're talking about now different from previous iterations, all of which, as you know, flunked?
Well, that's probably too long a question for the time that we have left.
But is it different? I mean, I guess I would say, is it radically different?
It actually isn't. Let me put it this way. I respect tremendously the doggedness with which the governor has stayed with this task. The governor's primary interest, by the way, the governor hasn't been terribly interested in this legislature versus judicial review controversy. The governor's primary focus has been from day one, I think it's crazy that we should have to spend 100% of whatever an adequate education cost is to everybody, and that we ought to be able to send money to the places that need it, and that's targeting. And he has stuck with it that all the way from day one, and he has basically taken that position, and he hasn't liked some of the other versions because they didn't adequately incorporate that. This amendment is to his satisfaction in that regard because it clearly states that the state, through the legislature, has the responsibility to mitigate local disparities in educational opportunity and fiscal capacity. That's code, if you will, for having a responsibility to target education aid to the places that need it, either because they've got students with special needs, or they have too many students, or they have a very low tax base.
And Jim, to you, final thoughts on this before the big vote today. From what we heard from Josh Rogers, it's going to be dicey.
Yes, it's going to be close. A couple of comments. First, there's a reason why we have three branches of government, and the court should continue to play a role in deciding what are the fundamental rights we have under our state constitution. Second, this amendment is not good for New Hampshire public education. It shifts the burden. If it passes, it's going to shift the burden of paying schools back to the towns and away from the state. That's bad news for our public schools, and that's bad news, very bad news, for many of our property taxpayers as well.
All right. Well, gentlemen, this has been really interesting. We will be watching the vote today. Jim Almendinger, I want to thank you very much for coming in. Jim Almendinger, staff attorney for the New Hampshire chapter of the National Education Association. Gene Van Loan, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. And, of course, what Jim and I have to say doesn't make a darn bit of difference because we don't get to vote today.
Good to have you, Gene. Thank you. Gene Van Loan, an expert in constitutional law who's been a consultant to both Republicans and Democrats on how best to draft a constitutional amendment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Let's take a quick minute now to check in with our short membership drive.
Thank you, Laura, and good morning. I'm Rick Ganley alongside Abby Goldstein, inviting you to become a member of NHPR during this very short two-day fun drive. With our fiscal year ending in just a few weeks, we'd love to hear from you right now. 1-888-805-6477 or go online at nhpr.org.
And here is what's going on. Our fiscal year ends in just a couple of weeks, June 30th, and we are closing the budget gap. We have just $46,000 left to raise from listeners to balance our budget. And just to give you some context, put it into perspective for you, we had just under $55,000 to raise when we came in 4 or 5 hours ago this morning. We've already raised almost